We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From inside Camp Randall Stadium, Learfield IMG College presents Behind the Badgers, an exclusive look inside Wisconsin athletics. Here are your hosts, Patrick Herb and Brian Mason.
You have landed on the official podcast of the second place Wisconsin Badgers basketball team after another big win, knocking off Rutgers at the Kohl Center. It's hard to believe that that's a true statement, Brian, but here we are, men's basketball, second place.
The dream lives. You're right. You're right there in the mix.
Greg,
coming into the stretch run of the season.
That's what Greg's message to the team was post-game, was everything that you have wanted is still right in front of you. And that may seem crazy from where this team was in November, but everything is still right in front of you. We're going to dive into that and much more. We got a great guest. Joe Krabbenhoff comes by the podcast, and he gives us an update on recruiting and what's up with the class of 2020, how they're doing in their high school senior year and beyond. We talked about the guy won 100 games in his career here at Wisconsin, and we had to nitpick at some of the painful memories from his playing career.
We weren't picking on him, but boy, now that you, as we're considering, hey, what ground did we cover right with Joe?
It's like, he's going to listen back to this, but you guys.
Right. Did we only pick the lowlights? No, we didn't. No, there's a lot of good stuff there. I was really interested in what he had to say about this year's team and everything that these guys have gone through and how they've handled it and what it's meant to him as a coach to be part of that.
And why they're different now than they were in November. Because this team that we just watched play against Rutgers it's almost unrecognizable from November to now. And that's in a good way. So let's dive right into that. Let's get our reactions from Wisconsin. 79-71 win over Rutgers on Sunday afternoon at the Kohl Center. Their fourth straight win. Their fifth of the last six games. What's going right for the team, Brian, in your mind?
Well, on a micro scale, I really liked in this game the way that they were able to absorb that late run that Rutgers put together and hold them off. Because we saw the only loss this team had at home this year was to Illinois when you couldn't quite finish the deal. Again, this is a different team.
They really want people to stick around in their seats till the final buzzer, though.
I mean, would I have liked a more comfortable result? Sure, but I thought for the team, I don't know. I thought that was a positive.
Where the Purdue game early in the week, you really had to white knuckle it and make every free throw on the stretch. This one did. It still got you got a little nervous when Rutgers cut it to five, but then Wisconsin had the answer. Trice hit a big bucket on the baseline to extend the lead. They made their free throws. They got a couple stops on defense, but they weren't able to get against Purdue. So they did close a game better than they did against Purdue.
And I sound like a broken record at this point, probably, but I'm really impressed with Demetri Trice and what he has done in his growth. I mean, last seven games now, he's got almost a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. He's got 44 assists.
And in high volume. Games. Yeah, I was just saying high volume of assists.
Career high 9 against Rutgers. So I keep going back to him being kind of the catalyst that's getting everything working for this team.
it helps when you make three-pointers. You're going to get assists. Your point guard's going to get assists when you make threes, and that's what this team has done now. Four straight games with double-digit three-pointers.
Hit 50% today, 11 to 22. So yeah. you're making them at a high rate.
So this is a jump shot team. It's kind of it's what they've evolved into, and that's not uncommon in college basketball. I mean, right. There's a lot of teams that ride that all season long. Purdue rode it last year to an Elite Eight and darn near a Final Four as a jump shot team. This team has a little bit of inside out when Reavers and Potter are playing well, but they're a jump shot team, and when they can hit double-digit threes, though, the way they defend and the way they take care of the ball, they are really dangerous. Now, the schedule has been easier, shall we say, this last half, so that's probably helped in their win streak. They played a lot of their real tough games, rough road games early on in the schedule, but they're winning the games that you have to win now to keep yourself in contention for not only a Big Ten title or a double bye in the Big Ten tournament, which is maybe more realistic, but also they're playing their way into a solid seed in the NCAA tournament, where it wasn't long ago you were looking at the bracketology going, are we in, are we out, are we in, are we out? Now, as of heading into the weekend, they were a 7th seed in ESPN's bracketology. That's before this win.
And lower than that in some others, but you're working your way up the ladder with this recent boost to the resume.
So what I've witnessed, too, in addition to just to hitting threes, which they are, and they're hitting them from all over the place, all different players. On Sunday, Potter had four of them going 4 for 5. It was Aleem Ford the game before. It was Brad Davison hitting a school record 8 the game before that against Nebraska. And you don't have to have 5 guys going nuts from outside, but if you can have 3 in each game, then you've got enough there to win and win convincingly.
Well, sticking on the offensive end, two things that stood out to me too beyond the 3-point shooting, which was very clear. One of them was the giant tomahawk slam that Micah Potter had, living up to that big jam
Twitter handle. Yeah.
I mean, that was just a fantastic play on the run. But also Brevin Pritzel, who has come into this year as 3-point ace, as his, you know, that's his game. What he was able to do inside the arc in this game was a big boost.
His confidence is surging. He's shooting and hitting shots now that I don't think he even thought about taking a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
No, he mixes it up on the glass too. I mean, he's done a great job getting rebounds. So he's playing like a more confident player.
The other standout for me that this team is not getting pushed around physically like they were maybe earlier in the season. And so they've avenged losses now in their last two games, Purdue and Rutgers. They've avenged losses that they had on the road earlier in the season where they got physically pushed around. They got dominated on the glass. Second chance points were a major problem in both those games. They've gone back now. Part of it's playing at home. They're comfortable. They play well there, but they're pushing back. Micah Potter, his presence has obviously been a huge part of that. But overall, they're playing a much more physical game than they were.
Yeah, the difference between the first time these teams met and today, 14 offensive rebounds turned into 23 second chance points for Rutgers in that first meeting.
Ugh.
Today, it was 7 offensive rebounds that only got translated into 6 second chance points. I mean, that's a massive difference in a game that comes down to being decided by 8 points.
We talked about it last week, I think, that after that Rutgers loss, which was the last game before Potter was eligible, coincidentally, when Wisconsin got pushed around, Greg Gard's message in the locker room, he challenged his guys. He said point blank, I don't know if we're tough enough to win in this league. Tough enough mentally, tough enough physically. I don't know. And we might have to make some changes to find out. Well, the guys have answered that challenge.
I'd give you another one to add to your Purdue and Rutgers examples is Michigan State. I mean, they went to East Lansing and got bullied by Michigan State and came back and just super confidently took it to the Spartans here in the Kohl Center. So
they've avenged 3 losses. They've got another opportunity. The only other one that they've lost that they get another chance at, Minnesota, will come here next weekend on Sunday at 5:30 tip on Big Ten Network. So they'll have a chance to make sure they don't get swept by any team, which is impressive in itself. One other thing I want to point out. So when you have a player like Kobe King leave the program, who's a double-digit scorer, your second leading scorer on the team, other players will need to fill that void. Like you're taking 10 points essentially out of your scoring rotation. And 3 guys in particular have made huge strides filling that gap. Trice, who we already talked about, he's doing it from scoring, assists, and 3-point shooting. His scoring has gone up from 6 points in Big Ten play. The games prior to Kobe leaving the program and after have gone from 6 points per game to 11. His assists have more than doubled from 3 to 7. And his 3-point shooting has gone from 25% to over 40%. Ford has almost doubled his scoring in the same scenario before and after, and he's more than doubled his rebounding. Lastly, Davison, who has kind of had an up and down season, and by his own admitting, he kind of was struggling maybe in January. Yeah. He's gone from his scoring is up 4 points per game, and his 3-point shooting has gone from 28% to over 45% now in these last 7 games.
And I don't think that's a coincidence that you have the question coming out of Kobe leaving and saying, okay, who's going to fill that void? It's not one guy.
Right.
The fact that it's taken three guys making a big jump and the other things that have happened for guys to step in and fill that production, this team is playing better as a team, and you can see it in the numbers.
Yeah, and they're having fun. You know, the joy is there. They're having fun. That it's a close locker room, and it always was. This is not about Kobe's departure, because the guys like him, and it was a close locker room then too. But winning helps, no question about it. And so now you got Nate Reavers showing up at the post game press conference Sunday wearing a Greg Gard Silent Assassin T-shirt from the John Rothstein collection online, and. You guys are showing their personalities. They're enjoying themselves. They're having fun, and it's fun to watch again.
Yeah, and not to give away too much what we're going to hear here in just a minute from Joe, but that there was one, as much as this team has faced in terms of adversity, there is still one thing that has sort of bound them all together, and that dates all the way back to what Howard Moore and his family went through back in the summer.
Yeah, no question about it. So Wisconsin's got 4 games left. The basketball program has 4 games left in the regular season. They go to Michigan up next. Really tough.
That's Michigan's looking
won,
tough.
Yeah, they've won 5 in a row. They won at Mackey Arena over the weekend when Xavier Simpson, their point guard, one of the better point guards in the Big Ten, went 0-for-10. And as a team, they shot 25% from threes, and they still won in Mackey Arena by, I think, double digits. They won handily there.
That's a lightning in a bottle game, because you can't do those. You can't have your best players go scoreless and struggle from three and win at that place where so few teams go in and get wins.
So Michigan's surging. They're doing what Wisconsin's doing. They're playing really well. They've got good wins in this stretch of 5. So that's going to be tough at Michigan. Then they come home and they get Minnesota and Northwestern in back-to-back games. They get to avenge a loss and then play the last-place team in Northwestern. Then they wrap up at Indiana. Again, that's going to be a challenge, tough place to play. They just beat Penn State over the weekend at Assembly Hall. But
a place where the Badgers have had a lot of success.
They have, and I'm telling you, we talked about it. Bart Torvik on Twitter, he's got the recipe for chaos in the league. He tweeted on Sunday the recipe for a 7-way tie atop the Big Ten leaderboard for a 7-way conference championship split, and that would have the Badgers going 3-1 here in the final 4 games, and there's a still chance. So the dream is alive.
And that's, at this point in the season, with as good as the Big Ten has been and as up and down as everybody seemingly in the league has operated from game to game and week to week, to be in a 4-way tie for second place going into the final 2 weeks of the regular season is
it's
an awesome spot to be.
Yeah, it's impressive.
It'll be fun. As a basketball fan, I'm just looking forward to seeing how all of this shakes out.
For sure. Yeah, and it's fun to be relevant, you know, this late in February and into March. We don't want to talk to an assistant coach about where they are in the standings at this point, because they're superstitious. And Joe Krabanoff even said in the locker room after the game, when it came up that Wisconsin was tied for second, he said, if you're not first, you're last. He yelled it out in the locker room. And Greg's like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you're not first, you're last. So we're not going to talk to him about where the Badgers are in the standings, but we're going to cover a whole bunch of other topics. We're excited and thankful that Joe Krabanoff came by the podcast this week.
Joe, thanks for joining us. Off the top, I just got to ask, Twitter. It's like a favorite pastime of yours.
Why do you hate Twitter?
Why do I hate Twitter? Where do I start?
How many times have you deleted the app and then reinstalled the app?
Oh, at least 50 times. And it depends on what time of year it is, really. I mean, after the season, it gets deleted immediately, because I'm going to spend way more time talking to my wife and being with my kids when I'm at home, and I'm not going to be on Twitter. But then as soon as I go on the road recruiting, or as soon as I come back in the office, download the app.
So how much of it is occupational hazard for you at this point?
Entirely. I use it all for recruiting and just keeping up to date with basically what our recruits are doing. And if I need to keep an eye on our current guys too, find out a lot on Twitter. But as far as entertainment, news and things like that, I'm still old school. I'd rather pick up a piece of paper.
Because you have an account, but you have never tweeted from it? Or do you tweet?
I have tweeted. I've gone back and looked at my first tweet back in 2009.
Oh,
yeah.
You go way
going,
back.
It says going to Ian's Pizza with Steamsma. It was after my junior year finished. That's when Twitter came out, and that was my first tweet.
It's a good start.
Yeah. That's the insight we're looking for.
I am one of those guys. I did tweet at one point in my life.
How different would your Twitter account be if it existed when you were in college?
Oh, man. Social media in general. Society and culture would have shifted drastically. I mean, we wouldn't be where we're at today because some of the stuff we were doing back then just isn't allowed or talked about anymore.
Would there be videos from the Dayton house that would be floating around?
Absolutely. And we would have thought that was perfectly normal and fun and cool to share. And you just can't do those things anymore.
We won't get too deep into those topics.
No.
But how has social media changed recruiting then? I mean, you've probably really only coached in the social media era, so you don't necessarily know before that, but it has evolved even from when you started to now.
Oh, the last 3 years, I think it's really taken off, and there's a lot of positives. I sound old school up here. I'm only 32 years old, and I get and see the positives of it all, and these kids are given a huge platform from a young age, so we're able to identify, you know, kids at 7th and 8th grade a lot easier from around the country, not just right here in your backyard because of social media. So there are some big positives to it. And the kids really feed off of it. They enjoy seeing where everybody else is going. They enjoy seeing pictures of themselves at these campuses, wearing the jerseys, you know, sharing all those things. And you just got to evolve with the times. And it's been fun to see how our guys, you know, are able to communicate with recruits and things like that through that. The world becomes a lot smaller in a hurry.
But it still comes down to developing relationships and making connections, right? I mean, you've got to square who these people really are versus the persona they have on Twitter or Instagram when you're getting recruiting.
Absolutely. There's a big difference between sending a Twitter direct message and, you know, snapping a kid versus sitting down at a dinner table or having them on campus and sitting in Coach Guard's office. There's a big difference. And I think that's just the beginning where you can, you know, establish a relationship or at least, you know, get to know each other. But then the real stuff has to be face-to-face and real communication still exists in this world, believe it or not. we try to have those conversations with our guys all the time. You can't text a guy or snap a guy when you're out on the floor or when you're really trying to get to know him. You gotta sit down and have those conversations.
So what part of, like, the whole recruiting process, what do you enjoy about it? Like, what are the parts that you do take a lot of pride in or you do have a good time with?
I enjoyed, you know, really getting to know them. I enjoy them really getting to know me as not just assistant coach Joe Krabnoff at Wisconsin, but husband Joe Krabnoff. I want them to get to know my wife, let them know what kind of father I am, see me around my kids. I want them around that environment. I want them around our guys when I'm with our guys and see how we communicate and just things that don't have anything to do with basketball. I want them to see the real me and really get to know me as a person.
So from a philosophy standpoint, what does Wisconsin look for in a kid? So let's say that you're at an AAU tournament and you're just broadly looking at kids where you got a couple targets, but I'm sure while you're looking at a target, you're looking at his teammates and who he's playing and just kind of keeping eyes on everything. What stands out that, like, okay, that kid might fit our profile?
Well, there's the obvious. I mean,
really,
really good players. We want to recruit all those ones first and foremost. But then as you dive deeper, what makes you unique or special to Wisconsin? I think it's having a humble approach to wanting to be a part of something bigger than yourself while realizing you can still accomplish everything you want for yourself within that framework. So, But this world's changed. You go back to social media, how that's kind of, it's becoming all about me world. And that's not entirely a bad thing because we want our players and our recruits to know that they can accomplish everything for themselves here. But at the same time, understand what it means to wear that jersey and that you're representing something bigger than just yourself. So you got to die. That doesn't happen by first sight. Yeah, that happens after many, many conversations, not just with the recruit, but also with the moms and dads, the teachers, the coaches, the friends. We go pretty deep in a hurry. If you can jump out the gym and make threes and really good passers and all those things, we really like all that too, just like every other coach in the country.
But why does Wisconsin have this track record of getting in early on kids before they blow up? I put in quotes, right? Like, there's a long list, and a lot of them haven't come here necessarily because they get to be big time profile and they have all the choices in the world. But I feel like I hear the story over and over again, like a Shemi Ojale, some kid in the Kansas City area, where we're one of the first majors to offer him, and then all of a sudden he goes and
here's
plays.
Here's the one, Zeke Nagy.
Yeah, he's at Arizona right now.
Power forward of the year and lottery pick.
Right.
And no one saw that other than us for about 2 years.
Right. So what's that secret sauce? Like, what, you know what I mean?
I think we just, we've swung and missed too sometimes. Well. We identify kids and they're not always first round draft picks. I'm not going to lie, but we enjoy getting out and being out early and watching the younger kids and establishing relationships early. I think that's no secret. I think that's just doing
early?
Your work early. I went and watched Nate Reavers as he was a junior. There was this little skinny freshman named Tyler Wall.
So I
bumped into him and said, hey, you're going to be a heck of a player someday. Think about Wisconsin in 2 years. So you just establish, you try to forecast and predict things when they're younger. And same with Zeke Nagy. We saw him when he was on campus when he was a freshman. And everybody told us we were crazy. That kid was going to be no good. As a sophomore, we offered him, and we're the only school in the country that had offered him.
So is there a challenge to that sometimes where if you're in early on a guy where you've got to kind of really trust your evaluation and not second guess, like looking over your shoulder, okay, why is nobody else, like, what are we not seeing here? Why is nobody else looking at this guy?
You can't be worried about that.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's easier said than done. You're going to throw an offer out there, and there's a couple things there. Is he really good enough if nobody else has offered him? Well, you got to trust your evaluation on him. And if you offer him, is everybody else in the country going to come see him tomorrow? That's the thing.
Yeah.
DJ Carton at Ohio State, great player, right? We were the first one to offer him. 10 days later, Marquette, Iowa, Ohio State, Indiana.
That's got to be so
everybody
frustrating.
Else was calling him. Nobody even had seen him, but they all decided to call him because we offered him. So you don't want to open up a can of worms, but it's a fine line of being the first, and kids appreciate that. They understand that loyalty and things like that matter, so they like to have that first offer from the school. They'll always remember the first one, but then at the same time, social media hits. They tweet it out. Ooh. Everybody calls.
Now what else?
It's a fine line of when and when not to, but by and large, I'd rather bet on ourselves. I always say that. I'll bet on myself over worrying about all this other stuff.
The recruitment of Nate Reavers is an interesting one, though, too, isn't it? Because of how early and where you were. Can you walk us through like what that recruiting was like for you personally with Nate Reavers?
Absolutely. It was going into his sophomore year, July period in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He was playing for the Minnesota Fury, program that not many high major schools, a really good program, but not many high majors were in the gym. I was the only one, and I wasn't a high major. I was at South Dakota State. I was just sitting there waiting for the next game to start. I wasn't there to watch Nate, trust me. But Nate's running up and down, and literally one of my best friends and one of my teammates was John Luehr. This kid looked like a young John Luehr, small head and all. John Luehr's got a really small head. It's really awkward because he's 7 feet. But Nate, same idea, right? And he's running up and down the floor, shooting threes, just dominating the game. I'm flipping through the book, our packets we get, and I see Reavers from Lakeville, 6'10".
Probably Reavers at the time.
Reavers. Right. What is this? There's always a phone number attached to it where you can call, and get connected. And it wasn't about a half hour later, I was on the phone with his dad. You can call the AU coach to have the dad call you, and he calls, and I'm talking to Paul Reavers, and I'm saying, Paul, I'm Joe Kravnoff, played at Wisconsin, at South Dakota State, your son's going to be great, this, that, and we get going on and on and on. 3-4 days later, we find out Nate Reavers is a 4.0, a great student, really good kid. We offer him at South Dakota State, and it was about a couple months later, he had 20 offers from anywhere from South Dakota State all the way to like Clemson, and those schools got involved. But I remember calling Coach Gard later that summer, earlier in the fall, and saying, hey, there's this kid you got to take a look at. His name's Nate Reavers, and the rest is history. I finish out the season at South Dakota State. Coach Gard takes over here. He calls me, come on board. They had just offered Nate. Him and Lamont Paris went and watched him in the state tournament that following year, and we jumped on board. I called, and I remember when Wisconsin offered Nate. I was at our conference tournament in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'm still coaching for the Jackrabbits. Wisconsin just offered Nate Reavers in Coach Gard's first year. I text Nate as soon as I see it on social media. Here we go back to social media. It all comes back to social media. I see it on social media, and I text Nate. I said, don't worry about becoming a Jackrabbit. You need to be a Badger. I'm still working for South Dakota State. So that was kind of cool.
What was that? How did that all play out? Because here you are. You're back in your home state. It's a great program at South Dakota State. Mm-hmm. You're a young coach. You got a good job. And then the opportunity to come back home.
Yeah.
Or a different version of home at Wisconsin.
Biggest no-brainer. I mean, I'm sitting there at South Dakota State. We're having a heck of a year. Our point guard was George Marshall, a former Badger. Mike Dom was a freshman, the future, future stud. So we were having a heck of a year. But half of my mind and half of my heart was on TV watching you guys, watching Coach Gard, eventually get this job. You know, yeah. He was interim, and I'm watching every single game like I was a part of the staff already, even though I was just wanting it so bad for him and the staff, and just to keep the continuity going of what I was a small part of what Coach Gard helped build, of what Coach Ryan and all the players. And so when that all was happening, I was so excited. But we were having our season, and we're getting ready to play Maryland in the first round of the NCAA tournament, who was a Big Ten team, and Wisconsin's playing in the first round Pitt, right?
Yeah,
and we're all watching, like, what's going to happen, you know? And then they Bronson Koenig hits the buzzer beater, you know? I'm like, okay, this is great. Keep going, you know? And then eventually, you know, Coach Close decided to hang him up, and they had an opening, and Coach Gard called out a few days later, and I'll never forget, I was outside pushing my kids on the swing, and I said, I should probably ask my wife, but it's a yes, we're coming. My wife wasn't there at the time, and she came home. I said, we're moving to Madison, Wisconsin.
Inside baseball here. So you were playing Maryland in the NCAA tournament. Did you call Greg then and say, hey, can we get your scouting report? Like, because I know that stuff happens. Talk us through how that happens, because it does, even if you don't have that direct of a connection. You call somebody and say, hey, we got this team on Absolutely. 2 days' notice.
Rarely do you call the head coach. I was going to let Coach Gard get to his Pittsburgh scout and let him. He was a little busy, but I remember calling Coach Moore and Coach Paris, and I think LP Lamont had the Maryland scout. So we talked for a little while. I had the Maryland scout as we were getting ready to play him, and there was a guy named Diamond Stone, and they were a heck of a team. They had a really good team, and we brought them all the way down to the last minute. We had a shot to win it, but that happens all the time. I remember getting ready for Villanova and, you know, the teams we played in the tournament. Who did we play last year?
Oregon,
yeah.
I erased
those memories out of my head. But, yeah, we talked
to – Let's talk more about Villanova.
Yeah, we talked to other coaches you know in the same conference or you know, you look at their schedule and find out if there's any similarities and you try to get a hold of somebody. Some are more willing to help than others. Same with us. Sometimes I don't – you know, you always want your conference to do well. So when people are calling us, hey, we got – South Dakota State played the Buckeyes. Two years ago,
sure.
Mike Dom was a senior, and the staff who I knew at South Dakota State called me and said, hey, can we get the Buckeye scout? I said, yeah, they're good. You know, they got a couple good players, but that's about all I can tell you. I didn't want to give them any secrets because I want the Buckeyes to win. It's good for the Big Ten, but I also wanted South Dakota State to win. So you just don't get involved at that point.
Yeah, tugs of loyalty there in both directions.
That's always a funny night on Selection Sunday. Mm-hmm. It was one of my favorite days of the year, Selection Sunday, but right as soon as the brackets come out, you guys all like go scramble to gather footage and film, like, you know, and start preparing. You guys, how do you divide up the scouts? So let's say, all right, Greg Gumbel says, and the Wisconsin Badgers, the number, whatever, 5 seed going to Boise, Idaho, mm-hmm. and they'll take on the Jackrabbits of South Dakota State. What happens then for you guys as assistant coaches?
Assistant coaches, we're all sitting there to go, all right, here, we're playing South Dakota State. Okay, Joe, obviously you know some of those players, you're familiar with the league, you're familiar with the program, you got that scout, okay? Then you look at the next matchup.
The second round matchup could be Tennessee or the
Louisville. 7-3 seed, yeah. So then you divvy that up amongst the two remaining assistants saying, have you ever had Louisville before? Have you ever had Tennessee before? Okay, you haven't? Okay. Do you know anybody who has had Louisville that you could call? Yes, I know 3 people. Okay, then you got Louisville.
Or what kind of defense do they run? Okay, that's a lot like Northwestern. So you got Northwestern scout, you're going
to
have Louisville.
Exactly. If they run the Princeton, if they run, you know, certain offense and they're well known to do something, the coach has been there forever and you know that, you're familiar with it, you've had a similar scout, then you go ahead and take it. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy scouting an opponent that you're starting from ground zero and just trying to understand them, know everything about them within 4 or 5 days.
More fun to scout the team that you know you're playing on Thursday or Friday in the first round or a potential short turnaround matchup?
Oh, man, that was my question too.
Here's a good one. We were playing Virginia Tech and Coach Paris had Virginia Tech scout. And then
Buffalo, New York, Howard, 2017.
Yep. 2017. And then Howard and I divvied up Villanova, the number one seed, and Mount St. Mary's, right?
Okay.
Isn't that the
I don't know.
16 seed, the last seed. Lamb. Because Villanova was the number one overall seed in the entire tournament, so they're playing the bottom, you know? And so Howard says, hey, I know Villanova. I've had Jay Wright before. I'll take Villanova. You take Mount St. Mary's. I'm like, yeah, okay. I'll take St. Mary's, yeah. No, don't worry. I don't even need to get my scout ready. But we go to so literally, I watch a few seconds just – they have no chance of winning. They're like a 30-point underdog.
Right.
We're sitting there.
Number one team in the country.
Number one team in the country. Haven't hardly lost all year. we're sitting there watching the game live. They play before us. Mount St. Mary's gets out to like an 11-2 score. It's one of the, you know, early in the game, Villanova's probably just like, I'm sorry, I literally start sweating. I'm on my phone. I'm texting AJ, our video coordinator, and Kat, our ops, you know, woman, that I'm like, hey, I need all the information I can get on Mount St. Mary's. Who coaches them? What are they running? I need stats. I need box scores. By the next media timeout, they're down 20-11. So they won by 40. But there was a 4-minute window there where I got really, really nervous.
At that point, do you turn your attention to helping Howard with Villanova?
Absolutely.
Like in the second half. Okay, so here's what we're looking at.
Absolutely. So he had already watched, obviously, been preparing a lot more than I was for Villanova, assuming Villanova was going to win. But you can't watch 30 games, you know, up to that point. So he said, hey, I've watched X, Y, and Z games. Can you go ahead and watch these? Let me know if you see anything different. Here's a scouting report. So he sent me the scout. I watched some games, made some notes. Howard was spot on, in my opinion. What do I know? I mean, he'd been doing a lot longer than I am, but we're able to help, and everybody's on the same team here.
So interesting NCAA tournament matchups. I think back to 2008. You guys had a great team, and you run into a guy named Steph Curry and Davidson in the Sweet 16. What do you remember about that run?
So this is what's different. We sound like dinosaurs in 2008. It's not that long ago, but we had no idea who Steph Curry or what he had been doing all year. He was killing it. He was a big deal, but. Yeah. I mean, maybe you saw him on SportsCenter when he had 50.
Or his his Georgetown game, like the game before.
The game before. Yeah. But all year long, you know, now we know about every single Ja Morant. I knew about Ja Morant after week one.
Like Obi Toppin at Dayton might be player of the year this year.
Everybody knows Obi Toppin because you're on social media. You see all the love for him. You're hearing everything about the world is so much smaller. We had no idea that Steph Curry was that good. Like we were like, oh, yeah, sure.
And then you probably looked at him in warm-ups and be like, okay, he's just a little guy.
Yeah, seriously. And you had watched what they – I remember specifically watching them play Georgetown, hoping Georgetown would win. Now, Georgetown had 3 or 4 pros, Roy Hibbert, Jeff Green. They had a really good guard. They were huge. Well, we were really big, too. We had Steensma, Butch, Landry, Krabnoff. We were big and – slow. But watching Davidson play Georgetown, I remember going, Georgetown was the number 2 overall seed or number 2 seed in the tournament, and just hoping we'd play Georgetown after watching that game because I was like, that's a bad matchup playing Davidson.
Yeah, because it wasn't just Curry. He was really good, but they had other guys, too.
They had the leading assist guy in the country, the point guard.
Yeah, the point guard,
yep. And they had a bunch of wings that were about 6'5 to 6'7. We had a bunch of 7-footers, a bunch of plotters.
Back to Selection Sunday. This is, you and I just talked about this the other day. So Wisconsin has been very fortunate to be in 20 of the last 21 tournaments, and this season projects to be another one, hopefully. And usually Wisconsin's comfortably in. So there isn't the suspense on Selection Sunday. It's just, okay, are we going to be a 4 seed or a 5 seed, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Your senior season was about as bubblicious as we've been as a program when we were one of the last teams in, a 12 seed going out to Idaho. What do you remember about Selection Sunday that day?
Yeah, I think we were 19-12 and we had just gotten our butts kicked by Ohio State and Evan Turner in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. So our last showing wasn't a good one. It was a loss, and it was a bad loss. We played terrible, awful. And so I remember Selection Sunday about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So we're obviously home early that weekend from the Big Ten tournament, which is always terrible. And you don't want to practice. You don't really know who you're playing. You want to rest a little bit. Been a long year. So we had a few days off. And I remember on Sunday afternoon, Marcus Landrieu and I went out to the Easttown Mall. We were just trying to avoid everything Selection Sunday as possible as we could. We were just trying to avoid the whole thing altogether. And then we had a little selection show here at the Nicholas Suites at the Kohl Center. And I
remember. Were you worried?
Extremely worried. We did not. I don't know if Bracket Joe Lenardi even existed. I don't know if he was doing his thing back then.
Not daily, like now.
It's all goes back social media. We didn't know exactly where we stood, but we knew it wasn't good. We knew 19-12 wasn't great. But we finished 4th in the Big Ten still, right? So we knew we had a chance, but obviously, it came down. We must have been one of the last 4 in as a 12 seed, but I remember sweating bullets waiting to hear our name called. I don't know which region we were in. If we were the last region picked, I can't really remember, but I remember not even wanting to watch Selection Sunday, thinking I would be a senior on the team that ended the streak.
Then you go to Boise, upset Florida State. Pop makes that amazing game winner.
Yeah.
Almost beat Xavier in the second round.
That's a fun thing about it. I was 99-35 going to Boise, my overall career record. And so when we beat Florida State, it was our 100th win as a senior class, me and Marcus and Kevin Gullickson, so Mo Kane. So it was really cool to win our 100th
game.
You
knew that going into it?
No, my dad later told me after we won, that was your 100th win. So I ended with 100 wins because we didn't beat Xavier. Sean Miller had a Xavier team that was really good, yeah, but good. We played terrible, and I still thought we should have won that game.
100 wins, too. Like, we've had a lot of players now that have accomplished that in their career, especially the last 10 years. A lot of classes have done it. 100 wins.
Yeah, at the time, that was the winningest class of all time.
Is averaging 25 a year. Mm-hmm. 20 is a good season. You know, you get to 20 wins, like, okay, you had a pretty good year. That's averaging 25.
That's 5 20-win seasons, you know.
We had those back-to-back years with Orlando's senior year and then our junior when we won the Big Ten. 30 and 31 was pretty special. Those 2 years were incredible seasons for Wisconsin basketball.
Can we go back to recruits here before we wrap up and talk about this class of 2020? I think you've had a chance to see a couple of these guys this year. Mm-hmm. How are their senior years playing out? It's a class of 5 guys. Lauren Bowman, a point guard out of Detroit. Stephen Crowell and Ben Carlson, 2 big guys out of the Minneapolis area. And then the Davis brothers, Johnny and Jordan Davis at La Crosse Central. How have their senior years been playing out? What do we need to know about those guys?
All 5 of them are having incredible seasons. I'd like to say I predicted them to keep getting better. Of course you want them to, but man, they're exceeding, you know, even our expectations internally as a staff. Start with right here at home with Johnny and Jordan are both well on their way to playing here at the Kohl Center in March, which would be a really cool thing for them. But they've had great years both individually and as a team. They've played a loaded schedule where they were down in Florida playing against national teams, and they showed out really well. Johnny's explosive, and he's got a little, I don't even like to say it because it's not fair to a 17 or 18 year old kid. He's got a little Lando Tucker in him.
Really?
That's saying a lot because that's arguably the best player to ever, not even arguably, I think the best player to ever play here. But
height wise, how does he compare? Tuck 6'6"?
6'5", 6'6". Right about the same. Tuck became a man overnight when he got here to Wisconsin, and I think Johnny's got the body and the frame to really fill out. And Jordan,
can he put his eyeballs on the rim like Tuck did in that famous Kentucky photograph that is one of my favorites? Pretty close?
That seemed like it was Photoshop, but Orlando had an insane bounce, but you know what? Johnny's got the same. Johnny is explosive. He's fearless. He's got the mentality that Orlando played the game with, and I think he's going to have a heck of a career, and I think it'll start with a splash early. And Jordan, his brother, is coming off a collarbone injury that he suffered as a wide receiver, but he's come through that really well and shooting the ball well, playing confidently. He's tough. He's defensive-minded, so those guys bring a good 1-2 punch. And then you go up to Minnesota, our 2 big guys in a loaded state. We have 6, 7, 8 high major players, a couple guys going, you know, to familiar schools, one going to Marquette, a couple going other places in the Big Ten. But Ben and Steven are standing out in a loaded state. Both Steven's doing a great job. He's got a lot of young Nate Reavers to him, which I think we've seen how that's...
Tiny head.
Tall, tiny head.
It's a good prototype here, then, if it's John Lurie and Nate Reavers, the predecessors.
But his game...
Somewhere there's like a high school sophomore with a small head going, I got a chance.
Here we go.
I want to be a Badger. But Steven can really shoot it and stretch it with 7 feet. He's got great feel. A really good passer. At 7 feet, which is a unique skill set. We had a guy named Frank that was a pretty good passer too, right? And then Ben's got a chance to make another guy who's got a chance to make a splash early. Just physically, he's so gifted and ready to go at this level. And he's versatile. He can really put the ball on the floor. So we're excited about both those guys.
How tall are those 2 guys measuring right now, would you guess?
Steven's all of 7 feet.
Wow.
And Ben Carlson's about 6'9", 6'10".
Nice.
But and Ben's bouncy. Ben's a really good athlete. Ben's tough. Ben really, he just had his 1,000th rebound and just set the school's all-time scoring record.
So is he closer to Micah? I mean, I don't like to compare guys because maybe it's not fair, but if we're just talking broad sense, that Crowell's a little Reavers-ish, is he more Micah that way? Physicality?
Yeah, physically. I think Micah's obviously a grown man at this point now. He's a thicker for sure, but I think Ben's different than anybody maybe we've ever had. He's not a big guy. He's big in stature and his build, but he moves really well. He can put the ball on the floor. He runs as well as anybody at 6'9", I think we've maybe ever had. So in his shot, you know, it's developing and he can stretch it a little bit, but he plays with a really high motor. So I'm excited about him carving his own path. as a Wisconsin player. You know, it's hard. We like comparisons as fans and as coaches, but he's really carving his own path. And then lastly, Lauren Bowman, talk about a loaded state in Michigan with incredible players and history of really good players. Lauren's carving his own path there as a high school standout.
He's in the running for Mr. Basketball there, isn't
he? Yeah, yeah. I've seen a lot of the players that are also in the running. Lauren's the best player in the state, so we're thrilled to get him. And his commitment to us meant so much. It really got us going in recruiting, and he started that off. And loyalty is a big thing with him and his family, and we're excited because he's got so many great qualities, not just as a basketball player, but a leader and a young man that I think is going to serve him well, and he's going to have a heck of a career.
I mean, the future is clearly really exciting. I think that you can hear it in your voice how excited you are for these guys that are coming in. But having you in the chair, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't give you a chance to talk about the current guys that are in the locker room and what they've been able to do this year, handling everything that's been thrown their way. And I would think as a coach, you got to be pretty proud of the group and how they've responded to everything.
Absolutely. And it's a mature group, an older group that's been through a lot. And we say so much adversity, so many things have been thrown their way. Really, the only thing that matters, the only thing I think that those guys really care about is what happened back in June with Howard and his family and the way that has kind of – you know, changed their lives forever. It's changed all of ours here at Wisconsin. And anything else that's happened, talk about perspective for young kids, for a 32-year-old here myself, of a father. You know, everybody has learned something through that tragedy. And I think if you haven't, you're not doing right by Jen and Jaden and Howard and Jarrell. And so I always try to, a lot has happened, a lot of wins, a lot of losses, a lot of adversity throughout the season as we started back in November, but none of that compares to what we went through and what really matters in life. And not having Howard here with us has been really hard. Not having two of his family members in the stands with us has been indescribable, you know. And I feel it as a coach guard, all the way on down, and our players. And I'm so proud of them for handling that. So everybody wants to talk about so many other things that have happened. I understand that it's a season and we get caught up in everything going on, but really none of that matters. I'm sorry. None of it matters. All that matters is what happened back in June and how we can continue to live our life and play this season the right way in honor of him and his wife and daughter and son.
Yeah. That the state, the saying on the back of those shooting shirts is real. Like, mm-hmm. It's not just slogans. Like, college basketball teams wear slogans on t-shirts all the time, and they've been doing that for years, but that do more, be more, for more is real. And one of the ways it really manifests itself is how this team and everybody's embraced Jarrell, Howard's son. And there was a photograph from the Purdue win last week where right after the game, he and Nate Reavers went out and jump back bump in midcourt, like right after the game. And I just, like, it gives me goosebumps thinking about that photo. Just, I don't know. I get emotional thinking about that photo and how cool that is. But that said, where do you think this team from a basketball standpoint, why are they different from that team we watched in Brooklyn?
There's a big guy named Micah Potter who really helped us. Micah has helped immensely, and I that can't be understated, really. I mean, we tried not to put a lot of pressure on him as he made his debut in late December, but what a big piece you're adding, a physical body that obviously fans have seen what he can produce both offensively and defensively on the glass, those types of things. So being able to add a player like that midway through your season was a huge bump for it.
Sure.
And I think that's in large part. But you're also seeing just growth and maturity. I think started at our point guard spot. Dimitri Trice playing the best ball of his career. And that's, I don't want to say, if I say that just was supposed to happen, that's taken away from what Meech has put in and the work and the time he spent watching film and studying and learning and getting better. But it's the natural growth you want your players to take. And I'm really proud of Meech because he's had ups, really highs and some downs where he hasn't played well, but he's become more consistent. And I think he's given himself to his team. Not that he always hasn't, because he's a very unselfish kid just by nature, but he's playing the game like a point guard should, and it's fun to watch. And you go down the line, I think Aleem Ford has really come on, and again, the same type of thing. You know, we've had guys come and go here this year, and Aleem has taken advantage of the opportunity given to him and run with it. I mean, I'm so proud of him, and, you know, he's just tapping into it now, because if he can continue this, because he's still got room to grow, but if he can continue to be consistent, he's going to have a heck of a finish to his career.
Joe, we play this game, you and I, during the season of would you take it? I'm not going to put you on the spot here. So we'll have a loss and we're feeling crummy, and we'd say, okay, would you take a 10 seed in the NCAA tournament right now? Like, not play out the season, would you take it in the NCAA tournament? Or we'll win three in a row and be like, hey, we're feeling pretty good. Would you take a 8 seed? No, we're going to play it out. Like, so we do this game that there's no purpose to it.
Patrick and I don't like sitting at the blackjack table at all. We're not gamblers at all.
Would you let it ride? So I'm not going to put you on the spot, but we've had some conversations where at various points of the season, would you take the play-in game in Dayton? I'm just happy to say that I feel much more confident about where we are right now. I'm not going to ask you what would you take right now, but congrats on a good season so far. Keep it rolling. Thanks for giving us some time.
Thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy listening to this podcast, and glad I could be on it. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Checks in the mail for that.
Yeah, right.
We do, Joe and I do play the would you take it game. So maybe I should put you on the spot here. If I said Badgers NCAA tournament, they get an 8 seed guaranteed, no worse, with 4 games to play, nothing, doesn't matter what happens, they get an 8 seed. Would you take 8 seed, or would you let it play out?
No, play it out.
See, that's what I
like. The way things are going right now, and God knows in this league this year, like, things could go topsy turvy in an instant. But the way things are going, I let it ride, man.
My instinct is almost always, no, play it out. Like, I have this blind optimism about our team. Like, I trust our guys. We can win more games.
Plus, I don't know. I hate the 8-9 game. Like, I don't know why. I don't like being.
Well, you got a really hard first game, obviously, yeah. And then you play the number one team,
exactly,
number seed, second round. It worked for the team in 2000. Plug, if you didn't listen to our interview with Mike Kelly and Andy Kowski from a couple weeks ago, check that out on Behind the Badgers podcast. All right. What else is going on in Wisconsin athletics, Brian?
Men's hockey went out with a bang on the home schedule. 13 goals in a 2-game sweep of the 9th-ranked Arizona State Sun Devils, which is where you think of hockey, you think Arizona State.
I wish I wasn't at either game. I wish, no, I was at Friday nights. That would have been a ton of fun.
7-6.
And they scored the game-winning goal with about a minute to go. It was tied 6-6 late in the game. That would have been a lot of fun. It sounds like the atmosphere at the Kohl Center was really good for that final weekend.
Yeah, Roman Ashan had a hat trick Friday, and then Max Zimmer, pretty cool, on senior night. He's a senior, got 2 goals to help finish off the sweep. So really good weekend for them, and now they go and they play at Ohio State for their last Big Ten series of the regular season.
Then they go into the Big Ten tournament, and the winner of the Big Ten tournament gets an automatic bid to the NCAA, right?
Yes, which is at this point the Badgers' path to make the tournament.
So they're certainly playing their best, it would seem, they're playing their best hockey of the last couple months right now.
Yeah,
so
and I think Tony, and I think Tony Granato would tell you that too. Like, they're playing better, but big hole to dig out of for them. So
yep. Women's hockey, though, congrats to friend of the pod, Mark Johnson. One of my favorite episodes last week when he told us all about the Miracle on Ice and also told us about his team that just won the WCHA for the 4th time in 5 years with a successful weekend up in Duluth.
Not an upset that the Badgers win the WCHA title.
Sort no. Of
there's some USSR quality to how they go through that league.
That's true. Yes. They are the Russian team of the 70s. But they don't, they're not in the army to play hockey.
No,
they're in school to play hockey.
But I thought Mark mentioned he had, you know, the three sort of offensive forces that team has, and all three of them are finals for the Patty Kazmaier Award: Abby Rock, Sophie Shirley, and Daryl Watts. So pretty cool.
Absolutely. And they're going to host, will they host a playoff game now in the WCHA tournament?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, we'll probably cut that part. Or maybe we won't. So what else? Swimming?
Swimming. Beta Nelson, I think, robbed of a third consecutive Big Ten Swimmer of the Championships
robbed.
Award.
I'm not sure
what else she could do. She won 4 titles. She repeated as the champ in the 100 back, 200 back, and 200 IM. Also helped the Badgers win the 800 freestyle relay. And that was actually a three-peat for her in both the 100 back and 200 back. So it gives her 8 individual titles for her career. Carly Piper, UW Hall of Famer, Olympic gold medalist, the only person in school history with more individual Big Ten titles than Beta Nelson's 8. So
Beta Nelson, Shout out Verona. Taught my boys swimming lessons, Tyler and Austin. So Ridgewood Pool, community pool, beat a Nelson. Men's track.
Yeah.
Making headlines.
Big time. The distance medley relay squad, the third fastest in collegiate history now.
What is a distance medley relay?
It's a really fun event, actually, if you're not familiar with it.
I am not.
Run as part of the indoor schedule of the NCAA championship. So it's a mix of 400, oh gosh, now I'm on the spot, 400, 600, 800 mile, I think. Sorry, Coach Byrne, if I mess that up and I'm forgetting. But 925.84 for the Badgers, third fastest in history of college.
What's the total
track
distance they're covering? Would you get? It's like roughly
4,000, I think. I think it's 4,000 meters.
So over 2 miles.
Yes.
In 925?
Yeah, so it comes down to this sprint to the finish with Notre Dame. Notre Dame wins it in 925.80 at their own home track. 925.84 for the Badgers. So the second, third fastest times in history. To put it in some perspective, the last anchor leg of that race is the mile. It's a 1,600-meter leg. Ollie Hoare for the Badgers, 3:54 on that final mile.
Good grief.
They were flying. So Badgers men and women both now on to the Big Ten championships this week.
Another big highlight, Wisconsin softball got a big win over the number 3 team in the country, Oklahoma, at a tournament this weekend. 4-3 victory. So that's the kind of win that will look good when it's resume time at the NCAA tournament, that you beat that team back in February. That one will hold up all season long. No doubt. Fact check, Wisconsin will not host a game during the WCHA playoffs. That's my bad. Those are in Minneapolis at the final faceoff. So I guess go up there to support the Lady Badgers.
Now, but hosting an NCAA tournament game is on the schedule here coming up.
That's what I was going to say. So sure, I wasn't totally wrong. Yeah, I sort of meant
they will host a game, yes.
But men's basketball does have home games remaining. They will be in action first Thursday at Michigan. That game tips at 6 o'clock Central Time on ESPN2. Then they will come home to try and steal back the rivalry with Minnesota. Are we going to bring the axe out for that one? We kind of have to, don't we? We
should, yeah.
That game's on Sunday at 5:30. Sunday 5:30 on Big Ten Network. Let's pack the Kohl Center for give Goldie the same welcome that they gave us in the barn a couple weeks ago. That was not pleasant. But, yeah, we'll have to see if we can...
we'll see what we can do there.
Have Jack Cohn come chop down the basket. and then it's senior day the following week, the final home game of Brevin Pritzel's career already.
It's crazy to think, like, hockey just wrapped up and basketball's looking at senior day. Like,
I know, it's hard to believe.
It's wild how fast this flies by.
But for now, let's appreciate that the Badgers, second place, and hopefully they'll stay there and have a shot at the title. We'll be here to recap it next week.
Unless we get fired.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.